Hare Krishna. Today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25. Our focus will be on text number 41. Chapter 25 of the 4th Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is titled as The Characteristics of King Puranjan. Text 41 goes as follows. Ka nama viravikhyatam. Ka nama viravikhyatam. Vadanyam priyadarshanam. Vadanyam priyadarshanam. Navrinita priyam praptam. Navrinita priyam praptam. Navrinita priyam praptam. Madrishitvadrisham patim. Madrishitvadrisham patim. Kanama viravikhyatam. Vadanyam priyadarshanam. Navrinita priyam praptam. Madrishitvadrisham patim. Ka nama viravikhyatam. Vadanyam priyadarshanam. Navrinita priyam praptam. Madrishitvadrisham patim. Ka. Who. Nama. Indeed. Veera. My dear hero. Vikhyatam. Famous. Vadanyam. Magnanimous. Priyadarshanam. Beautiful. Na. Not. Vrinita, would accept. Priyam, easily. Praptam, gotten. Madrishi, like me. Tvadrisham, like you. Patim, husband. Translation. O my dear hero, who in this world will not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten. Purport. Every husband is certainly a great hero to his wife. In other words, if a woman loves a man, that man appears very beautiful and magnanimous. Unless one becomes beautiful in the eyes of another, one cannot dedicate his whole life to another. The husband is considered very magnanimous because he gives as many children to the wife as she likes. Every woman is fond of children. Therefore, any husband who can please his wife by sex and give her children is considered very magnanimous. Not only does the husband become magnanimous by begetting children, but by giving his wife ornaments, nice food and dresses, he keeps her completely under submission. Such a satisfied wife will never give up the company of her husband. Manu Samhita recommends that to keep a wife satisfied, a husband should give her some ornaments. Because women are generally fond of home, ornaments, dresses, children, etc. In this way, the woman is the center of all material enjoyment. In this regard, the word vikhyatam is very significant. A man is always famous for his aggression toward a beautiful woman and such aggression is sometimes considered rape. Although rape is not legally allowed, it is a fact that a woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmay Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Panghum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatam Maham Vande Sri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Daivim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tatho Jayamudhiraye Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavatir Naishtiki Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha Nanda Gopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha Oh my dear hero, who in this world will not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten. So, in this section, which is titled as the Characteristics of King Puranjan, Narad Muni is giving an allegory to King Prachina Barhi to explain to him how Grihamedi life is very dangerous for spiritual progress and self-realization. In that context, in this allegory, he uses a story where Puranjana is the name of the man, which actually represents the consciousness of Prachin Barhi, very attached to home and hearth, to wife, home, children, wealth. And it is said that this Puranjan, who is the soul who desires to enjoy, he is getting into a city. The city is set up for sense gratification, very opulent city. And then as he is wandering about the city, he comes across a woman who is very, whose bodily features are naturally very attractive for a man who desires to enjoy the opposite sex. So he meets this woman, and this woman also is very encouraging of Puranjan to come and unite with her so that together they can enjoy the material body. So there is a conversation that is happening between Puranjan and this lady, this woman. As a part of that conversation, the woman, when she sees Puranjan, one of the sentences she says is, "Oh my dear hero, who in this world will not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten." So Prabhupada gives a very interesting pop-out here. Prabhupada mentions about the need for every woman to be loved and cared for and protected by her husband. And a lady, usually, even when I, many years back, His Holiness Devamrita Maharaj had asked all grihasthas to read this book, "Men are from Mars and
Women are from Venus. So very interesting book. And obviously, you know, when that book coupled with, you know, whatever little experience that I have in my own Grihastha ashram, usually women look at a man more from a point of view of chivalry, protection, and men more look at women, and women look at a man who is more stable in life, okay, for their life partner. But men are very easily attracted to the outward features. I'm talking about not about devotee men and devotee women. I'm talking about population in general. Women go more for stability and, you know, how protecting that person can be, whereas men go more for looks. And when women and typically when Prabhupada is talking in this purport about conditioned men and conditioned women, Prabhupada says that a conditioned woman, obviously, though she is a woman, she is still conditioned, okay, and a man, though he is a man, he is still conditioned. So the nature of conditioning is the propensity to enjoy each other. There is a famous verse, Pumsa Striya Mithuni Bhava Metam Taror Mitho Hridaya Grantim Ahur Ato Griha Sutapta Vittaya Janasya Mohoyam Aham Mameti. This says that the essence of this particular verse is that sex life, the attraction between man and woman, gives results to all kinds of activities in this material world. And if we see Grihastha ashram gradually, for a grihamedi, for a householder who is not a devotee, it gradually sucks the soul into working very, very hard to maintain one's family. So it is, and at the outset in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Canto 2, Chapter 1 itself, it is outlined the difference between Grihastha and Grihamedi life. It is often in one of the lectures that I heard, the speaker very nicely explained that Brahmacharya ashram is the fast track towards Krishna consciousness. Krishna is standing, let's say, from Melbourne to Sydney. Krishna is standing in Sydney, which is Goloka Vrindavan. Let's say Melbourne is the material world. Okay, this for example. And one is trying to travel to Sydney. But some people cannot travel in one shot to Sydney. Some people have to take exits. They have to have, you know, lunch break, tea break, cold drinks, rest, check into a motel, again start driving, right? So Grihastha ashram is like that. Grihastha ashram is an exit which is allowed for people who cannot quickly progress towards self-realization directly on the single way to Sydney. And most of the population is like that today in Kali Yuga, that most of the souls cannot remain in the Brahmacharya ashram and go back to Godhead. It is very few fortunate souls who can go back like that. Now, when a Grihastha takes a detour, when he takes the exit on the freeway, then it is cautioned that the exit has got many allurements. In the exit, there will be a, you know, what is that, McDonald's, and you know, there will be some nice restaurants which will offer nice food. There will be a motel which will offer air-conditioned facilities, you know, nice bed for enjoyment, you know, rest. So what happens? It is quite possible, and then there will be a shopping center also. You know, there will be a shopping mall also, you know, in the exit. So when a Grihastha exits, when a driver exits, takes that exit, then it is quite possible they will say that, okay, this is not a bad place at all. Why go to Sydney in the first place? No, we have got everything for our enjoyment here itself. So it's not a bad place. So there is a peril that, besotted with that enjoyment, a Grihamedi will forget to come back into the normal path. The journey which started with the quest of self-realization is now caught in how to be very happy in the exit that we have taken, and how to work very hard to continue affording that food and those facilities which the exit provides. So Prabhupada is cautioning us through this purport. He is cautioning both men as well as women. This verse at the outset may sound a little bit controversial. I was checking with Manmohan Prabhu and Gopurnesh Prabhu, are there any new people in this temple today sitting? Because obviously nobody would like to, you know, usually a woman would not like to hear this, what Prabhupada is writing, that although rape is not legally allowed, it's a fact that woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. At the outset, this can seem extremely controversial. Okay, and someone can just leave the temple and go. right? But obviously, you know, all of us have immense faith in the Panchama Purusharta aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam will never mention something which is incorrect or adharmic. Neither will a realized soul like Srila Prabhupada would ever make a sentence which is discriminating between man and woman. So we have to understand the real meaning of why, you know, Prabhupada, you know, used this word here, and I am very thankful to His Grace Gopalandesh Prabhu for helping me understand this. So Prabhuji showed me the old English definition of rape. It is mentioned that Prabhupada is, it's mentioned in the definition itself that rape is used as a word for abduction. Okay. So therefore, when you substitute that word here and now look at this, it makes, there's a lot of sense in it, because we see that in, even in the Mahabharata, we see that, and even in Krishna's Leela, we see that, you know, women of those age, they liked to choose their husband in a swayamvar, and they want their husband to be chivalrous, a person who can really control them. Okay, not that they don't want to marry a person who is cowardly in nature. Such that the woman has to fend for herself throughout her life for her defense. So they want a man who is powerful in that sense, powerful enough that he will fight with the Kshatriya warriors and then has the power to abduct and win them. So the, if you see the charitra of Rukmini, if you see, you know, Subhadra, both of them are very good examples of people who liked to be abducted. Obviously, a woman would also look for a man of proper character who will abduct them. It's not that a woman, you know, wants a demon to abduct them. It's not like that. But a woman generally wants a husband who is powerful, and, you know, if a person who has the ability to abduct will also have the ability to protect them against other predators. Okay. So in that sense, Prabhupada is mentioning here that woman likes a man who is generally very aggressive by nature in the context of protection. So nevertheless, here there are many other interesting points that Prabhupada mentions about a husband and what makes a wife like a husband. So I was taking some notes from Grihastha Manual in that context to see what you know, some of the saintly personalities have to say about what is the duty of an ideal husband. How should a husband conduct himself, especially a devotee husband? So there are some 9 points that attracted my attention. So I will just share those 9 points with you. It is mentioned that a good husband, number 1, is one who appreciates his wife and who shows gratitude to his wife. Appreciation and gratitude. Okay. Now, appreciation towards the wife, the greatest appreciation and gratitude any devotee husband can show to his wife is because the wife is a devotee. Sometimes, for example, even in our congregation, sometimes people who are people want have develop a desire, okay, saying that, okay, now I want to embrace Grihastha Ashram. So the first thing what devotee looks for is, okay, is the wife, is my prospective the prospective girl, is she a devotee? That's what he looks for. And but what happens is, in the initial enthusiasm, yes, they feel very safe that, okay, this woman will not take me away from my Krishna consciousness and make me, you know, drag me into material life again. But after marriage, sometimes, you know, because familiarity breeds contempt, it is very easy for the husband to forget how fortunate he is that he has got such a wife who is very serious in Krishna consciousness. So here we are getting reminded that that we need to develop the attitude of appreciation as well as gratitude towards our wife. Because the wife protects the husband's Krishna consciousness many times. Okay, I can say with full confidence that without my wife, Yamunalila, I wouldn't have been able to practice Krishna consciousness. Okay, so whatever I can say that I have practiced. In fact, yes, in our story was such that, you know, she came later to Krishna consciousness. I was the first one in the family to become devotee, and initial days, you know, it was me who was trying to cultivate her, bring her in Krishna consciousness. But once she took to it, I can confidently say that she has been my inspiration in Krishna consciousness. So it is she who has helped me a great deal overcome my anarthas and protect me from Maya. So if we are somehow able to develop this attitude of gratitude, you know, for our spouses, you know, and consider ourselves very fortunate, then we have a greater chance that we will have a successful grihastashram. Second is not neglecting, demeaning or casting ill remarks on our wives. It is mentioned here that great Vaishnavas are caring and protective husbands. It is a duty of a husband to be protective of his wife. Protective of wife doesn't mean that not to correct the wife when she is doing something wrong. Protective of the wife means that husband, it is mentioned in the Kardama Muni section that a husband should be Tejiyamsa. Tejiyamsa means the husband should be the spiritual leader in the house. So in that sense, the husband must set the standards of devotional service in the house. And the wife will follow. A husband should also, so while the husband keeps providing to the wife, the husband also keeps talking to the wife about the need for self-realization. Because it is quite possible that one may not get a devotee wife. Okay, so in that sense, the duty of the husband is not just to get dragged into the wife, you know, whatever desires the wife is wanting the husband to fulfill, but initially when the husband starts fulfilling those desires, but gradually we have to play the kabaddi game of bringing the wife gradually back into Krishna consciousness. So it is the duty of a husband to but not to cast demeaning or ill remarks on the wife. It may happen sometimes that the wife may not be as interested in Krishna consciousness as the husband, but the husband should never think that he is so advanced that he can go and then talk about her disinterest in Krishna consciousness in public or demean her, saying that Prabhuji, you know how advanced I am, but he is not interested at all. You know, so no, this is not a matter for public discussion. It has to be handled. There is a congregation. There are devotees. You know, we have we have a very strong congregation of lot of experienced grihasthas. So we have Prabhudas Prabhu, we have Bhakta Prabhu, we have Anirudh Prabhu. All of them are success stories in marriage, right? So if you see actually Australian culture where divorce is, rates are highly prevalent, if you see the kind of grihasthas that we have the opportunity to look up to, we can learn so many things from their lives. So there is lot of opportunity to take advice, you know, for grihasthas who are struggling in their grihasthashram, despite husband and wife being devotees many times. Okay. The third point was that the husband takes bottom line for the wife's being and protection in all cases. So the husband should not depend on the wife's income. That is not a very good grihasthashram. The husband should take bottom line for bringing income to the house. Incidentally, it happens in, you know, that sometimes, you know, we live in certain countries or we are in certain situations where, you know, the wife is a wife has to do a job, but that cannot be a permanent feature. It cannot be that the husband is not working whereas the wife is only, you know, husband leaves the wife to do the job of making money and just simply, you know, sits and eats whatever the wife is earning. So that is not that's not the correct duty of a husband. So then fourth point is Tejiyamsa, which I mentioned, train the wife. The husband has to train the wife nicely in Krishna consciousness. And if the child is there, it is mentioned that it is the husband's responsibility to see that the whole family escapes the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. The husband must provide also wife basic necessities, food, clothes, house. It is said that husband should also provide ornaments to the wife and other necessities in reasonable quantity. That is also mentioned. Okay. It is mentioned that In grihastha life, the husband must cultivate the quality of humility, tolerance and understanding. Now whether it is grihastha ashram or whether it is not grihastha ashram, these are generic points. But all the more important, humility, tolerance and understanding, they are important attributes in a husband performing his duties successfully. At the same time, it is mentioned that because the husband is doing a good job, you know, at maintaining the family and even cultivating wife and Krishna consciousness, the husband should not become proud that he is the one who is providing for the family. He is the spiritual leader in the house. So that pride also should not enter. Because when pride enters, there is a chance that one becomes dictatorial or autocratic in one's approach. So the husband has to protect the wife physically, emotionally as well as spiritually. That is the dharma of a husband. husband has to be especially kind, considerate and loving when the wife is pregnant. Especially kind, extra special care has to be taken, and husband must go all out to ensure that the wife has an opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and perform devotional service to the best extent that her health permits. So husband must cooperate in that regard. Finally, it is mentioned that to be considerate, compassionate and helpful when his wife gives birth to a child and has to pass through the difficult phase of motherhood. This is after delivery. When she is going through motherhood, it can disturb her physical and mental state and also her devotional service. So these are some of the points that go towards contributing to being a good husband. So Prabhupada is also mentioning a lot of points in this purport, and also the ladies are cautioned that do not harass the husband for more than what are the basic necessities of life, because then it is quite possible that the husband has over endeavor to fulfill those necessities may leave Krishna consciousness, and neither the wife will benefit, nor the husband will benefit, nor the children, nor the family will benefit by that. So this is some important points from this book. Today is a very special day, because there are so many things that are very significant in today's day. For example, today marks the Krishna Rasa Yatra. Today is where Lord Krishna enjoyed the Rasa Leela with the gopis and vice versa. Today also marks Tulsi Shaligram Vivaha, the marriage of Tulsi and Lord Krishna. Today also marks the appearance of one of the greatest acharyas on the planet, Sri Nimbarkacharya. And today also marks the end of Bhishma Panchaka, the end of Damodar month and the end of Kartik month. So it's a very special day in one sense. So we will invest some time in discussing the glories of each of these festivals or events, spiritual events. I'll start with Krishna Rasa Yatra. It is mentioned that this is the second full moon night of Kartik, which is today, and it marks a glorious end to the Damodar month, to the Damodar festival. It is mentioned that the Ras Leela, Lord Krishna does two Ras Leelas, and this is the second one that he does today. And also, this is the last transcendental pastime that Lord Krishna does in the month of Kartik. So many pastimes we have seen, Damodar Leela, Govardhan Leela, so many are there. This is the last pastime. So, the earlier Rasa dance was done closer to Vasant Panchami, which is the holy time in India. H-O-L-I, the festival of colors. Closer to holy that happens. Okay. And this is the second Ras Leela that Lord Krishna does. It is also mentioned that while the first Ras Leela is celebrated more in Vrindavan, the second Ras Leela is celebrated more in Bengal. I don't know the reason why it is as such. Okay. But maybe after the class, if anyone knows, they can guide me on that. It is mentioned that on this day of Krishna Rasa Yatra, deities of Radha and Krishna, they are worshipped with many flowers, and they are placed in a Rasa Mandap surrounded by gopis. That is the way they are worshipped. And lot of pots of kheer are prepared to serve the deities. I am not sure whether today do we have kheer preparation. So it is mentioned that this is the one way which we can serve their deities. Now, Rasa Leela is so very important in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, because out of all the rasas, it is mentioned that the Madhurya Ras is the highest. And in Madhurya Ras, out of Swaki and Parakya, Ras in union and Ras in separation, it is considered that Ras in separation is the highest. Vipralamba Seva, serving the Lord in separation, is the highest. So that marks the mood of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So because the Rasa Leela has got an aspect of some union but also the separation from the Lord, Therefore, this event becomes very important to discuss for all of us. So, some of the key lessons that we learn in Rasalila, from Rasalila. So, Rasalila begins when Lord Krishna goes below, goes under the Kadamba tree, he's standing and he's starting to play the flute under the full moon night. So, it is said that Mother Nature, you know, creates a very conducive environment, because Mother Nature is the servant of Prakriti, works under the Lord's instruction. So, Yogmaya also, as Krishna's internal energy, she also arranges the whole atmosphere of the Rasalila in such a way that it is very conducive for Lord Krishna doing his conjugal pastimes with the gopis. So, it is mentioned that as soon as Lord Krishna played his flute, the sound was so mellifluous that all the gopis, whatever duties they were doing, somewhere, you know, preparing a dinner, or somewhere preparing food for their family, someone was feeding their child, someone was cleaning the house, some gopis were dressing up, okay. So, it is said that immediately they dropped all those activities and they rushed towards Krishna. So, the meaning of this is that there is no important activity, there is no more higher important activity for a soul than to be in the service of the Lord. So, no activity in this world can have hold a higher position than that of accepting the call of duty which comes from the Lord. At the same time, in the same, in Krishna book, Prabhupada also elaborates that it does not mean necessarily that, you know, people should leave their you know, household duties and then in the name of Krishna consciousness. So, we have to be very careful. So, to understand this purport carefully. So, a devotee woman balances her household duties as well as her services to the deities, in the sense that the household duties of a devotee lady are also considered part of bhakti. Okay, so this, in one sense, a lady should not be fanatic that I don't need to cook in the house, I don't need to take care of family because I'm going for Mangalarti or I'm, you know, I'm doing deity worship. So it is said that a devotee lady considers home, the activities of home also as bhakti, the activities of temple also as bhakti. So the gopis are leaving everything and then rushing to meet their Lord. It is said that, of course, some of the gopis were stopped and they could not go to meet Lord Krishna. It is said they got the same benefit. In fact, one could say they got even higher benefit, because the purification that they had in the fire of separation from Krishna was so high that it burnt away even vestiges of anarthas that they might have had. So, Prabhupada is mentioning here that the fire of separation, when we chant in the mood of separation from the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, tears must come to our eyes in our separation from the Lord. We must feel utterly helpless when we are chanting and rely on the mercy of the Lord. And when we do that, when we develop that mood of helplessness in devotional service, yet maintain sincerely keep calling out the holy name, then we get the mercy of the Lord. And in the fire of that separation, all our anarthas like lust, anger, envy, greed, pride, they are burnt away. So that is another lesson that we get from Srila Prabhupada's purports in those sections through Krishna book. Lord Krishna also, when the gopis come in front of Lord Krishna eventually, having dropped everything, what is Lord Krishna telling them? Why have you come here? Go back to your house. And Lord Krishna gives them, the gopis, a lecture on household duties, right? On the dharma of a lady in the house, of a grihani. So, Krishna is giving that. So, it is also mentioned here that Lord Krishna is actually not talking to the gopis. By in explaining to the gopis, he is explaining to all of us in this world. So, and then another reason that is given is that he is explaining this to the gopis so that ladies do not develop sahajiya bhav towards Lord Krishna. and prematurely imitate the spontaneous affection that the gopis had for Lord Krishna. These are two lessons that come there. Then what happens? Even after, despite Lord Krishna's best attempts to convince the gopis are refusing to return. So they say that where will we return? Without you, we understand that we have, you know, our families, etc. But everything for us is meaningless if you are not there. For example, everything, all zeros become meaningful in the bank if there is a one ahead of it. Right? Otherwise, everything is meaningless. Shunya itam jagat sarvam govinda virayaname. So they say that the whole world is meaningless for us. And they also counter Krishna with his own argument. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasya. They say that you have said that you are the supreme enjoyer. Right? So now, we are meant for your enjoyment. So we are following whatever you said in Bhagavad Gita. So like that they are putting counter arguments to Lord Krishna. So and then finally, obviously, you know, Lord Krishna loses that argument with the gopis. And Lord Krishna also understands the mood of the gopis. That they are not trying to escape their familial duties. Rather, they have come here because of their spontaneous attraction and love for me. So Srila Prabhupada in this context comments on material lust versus spiritual love. Prabhupada says material lust is binding in nature and spiritual love is transcendental and liberating in its nature. Why else will Paramahamsas, who are the highest celibates that mankind will ever know, why else will they be celibate but still relish the Rasalila pastimes of the Lord? So they have to be transcendental in their nature. It is also mentioned in that section the word yoga mayam upashritaha. So this is not, this Rasalila should not be considered as belonging to the external energy or the Mahamaya of the Lord. Rather, it belongs to the Yoga Maya feature of the Lord. Yoga Mayam Upashritaha. In Chaitanya Charitamrit, Prabhupada also mentions, takes this opportunity to say, just like gold and iron are different. Both of them are metals, but still both of them are very different in their being precious. So one must not compare the Rasalila to mundane sexual activity of this world. And Prabhupada reminds us that most gopis are eternal companions of the Lord. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabhi. So we know from Brahma Samhita. So they are eternal companions of the Lord. So the Lord is enjoying with his own internal energy. So Lord Krishna in this exchange of words between exchange of loving words between Lord Krishna and the gopis, Lord Krishna is defeated by the loving determination of the gopis. So he finally embraces the gopis and then he commences the rasa dance. However, and Lord Krishna, what he does, he expands himself such that every gopi believes that Lord Krishna is dancing only with me. So when he does that, when the gopis get a feeling that Lord Krishna is dancing with me only, at some point in time they get some sense of pride, saying that, okay, I am very special to the Lord, whereas other gopis have not got this mercy what I got. So immediately Lord Krishna disappears from their vision. So through this Rasalila pastime, Lord is also telling us that though we may be doing very high services or very intimate services for the Lord, at no point in time we should become proud just because we have got the privilege of doing certain services which other people do not have the privilege to do so. Every service towards Lord Krishna is divine. No service is less or higher. In fact, some services where we are not even coming in front of the Lord, which we are doing in some corner where nobody is seeing, will be so glorious that yes, we are not seeing Krishna, but Lord Krishna is so inspired to come and see us. So therefore, we are cautioned to understand this principle and keep this at the back of our mind, so that we are always responsible in our dealings and in the way that we perceive different services. So that was about Krishna Rasa Yatra. The second is Tulsi Salagram Vivaha. So it is mentioned that Tulsi's former birth was, she was known as Vrinda, and she was the daughter of a giant whose name was Nemi. More importantly, she was the wife of a demon whose name was Jalandhar. Jalandhar means Jal ke andar. So this Jalandhar, Jal is water. So this Jalandhar was resident of water. So But he had a different conception about himself. He said, because I am born in water and I am living in water, I am the king of water. Therefore, he claimed his sovereignty over the ocean. And he also wanted to claim sovereignty over whatever precious things that were produced during the Amrit Manthan pastime, the churning of the ocean. So he said, it is all mine now. I am the owner of all these things. Who was this? This was Vrinda's husband, Jalandhar. So, now, he had a special kind of power. His power was that as long as his wife Vrinda will remain chaste with him, nobody can defeat him. He had that power. Okay, and who was his wife? Vrinda, the most chaste woman, right? And because, but then as much as Vrinda was chaste and that was her piety, Jalandhar's impiety was to commit sinful activities on the strength of his wife's chastity. What is that? Namnat balad yasyahi papa buddhir. Committing sinful activities on the basis of something, some other piety that one may give. And it was not even a direct piety of Jalandhar, it was a derived piety of his wife. But nevertheless, being a fool, he thought that, you know, now he can keep on harassing the Devi Devatas, he can keep on enjoying the opulences of the ocean. So, obviously, you know, Lord Vishnu comes in, yada yada hi dharmasya paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam. Lord Vishnu appeared, and Lord Vishnu, what he did, he assumed the form of Jalandhar and he went and did pastime with Vrinda. Now when Vrinda realized that this is not my husband Jalandhar, she is a chaste woman, so she cursed, you know, it is mentioned she cursed Vishnu, saying that you will become a black stone, which is the Shalagrama stone. Okay. Of course, again, this is the pastime arranged by the Lord. Vrinda is a devotee of Lord Vishnu, the greatest devotee, amongst the greatest devotees of Lord Vishnu. So, Vishnu also, in his admiration of her chastity and piety, Vishnu also said that now I will take you and transplant you into the Tulsi plant. So, Vrinda Devi became Tulsi Devi. So, and Lord said that I promise to marry you every day on this day of, every year, on this day of Kartik. So, it is mentioned that all devout Hindu women worship the Tulsi plant with flowers and milk, assuming Lord Krishna to be present in Tulsi on this auspicious day. Of course, for devotees, we see the presence of Lord Krishna every day in Tulsi Devi. And a marriage ceremony is performed between the Tulsi and the Saligram Shila. And the procedure of how this marriage should be performed is mentioned in Narada Pancharatra. It is also said that any human being, okay, especially in a fatherly mood, who looks with Tulsi Maharani as his daughter and offers Tulsi to Vishnu, he says that he gets the pious benefits of doing kanya dana, of giving, as like the father gives the daughter away to the son-in-law. So similar way, he gets the benefit of kanya dana. And also, this marriage of this Tulsi Vivaha with Lord Krishna, it marks the auspicious opening of the annual marriage season of the Hindus in India. So the marriage season will now start with this. So, somebody was asking me, then why don't we do this Tulsi Vivaha in ISKCON? Okay. So this is my limited understanding, and I'll be guided by, you know, all the others here. Prabhupada did not establish Tulsi Vivaha in ISKCON temple. Tulsi Vivaha is done annually once. Prabhupada gave a regimen of worshipping Tulsi Maharani daily for all of us, more than once a day, right? So Prabhupada established Tulsi worship probably, you know, on a much more regular and higher scale than anyone else has. So definitely Tulsi Maharani, you know, is respected and worshipped every day by us. However, our sampradaya is not one of union. Our sampradaya is one of parakya, not of swakya. In fact, if we have to celebrate Vivaha, then why not celebrate Vivaha Radharani also, you know, with Krishna? Because that is not the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is vipralamba, love in separation. So therefore, this is my understanding that why Srila Prabhupada may not have insisted. Of course, I'll be guided. Gopalakrishna Prabhu, is that in line with? Yeah. So moving on from Tulsi Shalagram, we discussed Krishna Rasa Yatra, we discussed Tulsi Shalagram Viva. It is also the auspicious day of one of the greatest acharyas on the planet, Srila Nimbarka Acharya. Just like a university has got many institutions affiliated with it, like a university, Bombay University, may have various colleges affiliated under Bombay University, right? And each and every college or institution will have a pedigree of teachers coming in a disciplic succession. If we understand that, then we will understand the three things that are important, you know, in spiritual, in dissemination of spiritual knowledge. Sampradaya, which is akin to the university, mathas, which are akin to the institution, and parampara, or pedigree or disciplic succession, which is akin to the teachers in that institution coming in disciplic succession. So at the outset, for dissemination of spiritual education, there were four great personalities, okay, divine personalities, who took this responsibility on themselves. The first one was Lakshmi Devi, who started the Sri Sampradaya. The second was Lord Shiv, who started the Rudra Sampradaya. The third is Lord Brahma, who started the Brahma Sampradaya. And the fourth is the Kumaras, who started the Kumara Sampradaya. Now, under Sri Sampradaya, Sripad Ramanujacharya is one of the most well-known saints under that Sampradaya. Under Rudra Sampradaya, we have Vishnu Swami. And then later, Vallabhacharya also came under the same Sampradaya. Under the Brahma Sampradaya, Madhvacharya was one of the greatest Acharyas. And after Madhvacharya came, then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Krishna himself adventured and created a special branch of Madhva Sampradaya, which is called as Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Under that Sampradaya, ISKCON is one of the mathas or the institutions. There are others also, Chaitanya Saraswat Math, Gaudiya Math, so many are there. So ISKCON, Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada established the biggest matha, which is ISKCON. Similarly, if you now go to the Ashwini Kumaras, the most prominent Acharya who is coming under the Kumara Sampradaya is Srila Nimbarkacharya. So, Srila Nimbarkacharya, he lived in the 11th and 12th centuries. He was born to very pious parents. And the philosophy which he propounded was known as Dvaita Advaita. So, we have Vishishta Advaita of Ramanujacharya, we have Dvaita of Madhvacharya, we have Achintya Bheda Bheda, which is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and here we have Dvaita Advaita of Nimbarkacharya. Now, if you study all this, all of them are very similar. Okay, they just talk about the same thing in different ways, but the principle is same, that the jiva can never become Bhagwan. The jiva will always remain a bhritya. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasava Bhritya. Jiva will always be subordinate. Matter is always different and subordinate to spirit. The source of matter is Brahman. So the same principle, when you read Dvaita Advaita, you will find it is very similar to Achintya Veda Veda. So, Sripad Nimbarkacharya lived most of his life in a place called Nimbagram, which is near Govardhan, which is where he performed his devotional life. So it is mentioned that once a Jain Pandit had visited Nimbarkacharya, and Nimbarkacharya invited him to have prasadam, but the sun had gone down. And in Jainism, they don't eat after sunset. Okay, but Nimbarkacharya wanted him to honor prasadam, Krishna prasadam. And for honoring Krishna prasadam, that is the highest dharma. There is no other dharma higher than always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. So when Krishna prasadam comes, there is it has to be honored. So, but this Jain Pandit was, Niyamagraha. So he said, no. So therefore, and he didn't know who he was dealing with. So therefore, okay, Nimbarkacharya said, okay, if the sun has gone down, I will bring the sun back. So, from between a Nimba tree, he brought the sun back. And when the Jain devotee saw this, he was astounded. He said, oh my goodness, this is somebody, this is not an ordinary person I am dealing with. Then he, considering it is good fortune, he honored the prasadam with Nimbarkacharya. So, Nimba tree, and Arka means sun. So Nimba Arka Acharya, that is how his name became Nimbarka Acharya, one who got the sunrise. Now Nimbarka Acharya, he was worshipping Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is worshipped with Bilva. So there is a place called Bilva Paksha in Rudra Dweep, in Navadweep, and that is where a group of Brahmins were worshipping Lord Shiva. Now as they were worshipping Lord Shiva, one personality out of them, who is that? Nimbarka Acharya. Lord Shiva found his worship to be of a much higher intense devotion than the others. So he so pleased was Lord Shiva that he appeared in front of Nimbarka Acharya and told him that I would like you to now go to the next nearby forest which is there. The Ashwini Kumaras are there. The four Kumaras are there. Okay. So these four Kumaras, they are great personalities, and I want you to take Diksha and Shiksha from them and commence your Vishnu Bhakti from this point onwards. So having taken this instruction, Nimbarka Acharya goes there. He meets the, he sees the four Kumaras who are highly effulgent. So he realizes these are great personalities. He surrenders to them. And Sanat Kumar, who is the senior most, then he gives him instruction saying that you go and take a bath in the river and come back. Okay. He takes a bath, comes back, and then he gives him Radha Krishna Naam, which is what the Nimbarkis chant. So he gives them Radha Krishna Naam and gives him the principles of how to worship Radha and Krishna in Bhava Marga, in Bhava Bhakti. And then also gives him instruction that your primary scripture of which you will study from now is the Sanat Kumar Samhita, which Sanat Kumar has himself propounded. So that became his primary reference point or scripture. So taking these instructions, Nimbarka Acharya worshipped Radha and Krishna Naam, and so intense was his, so sincere was his meditation, so that it attracted Radha and Krishna to appear in front of him. So as soon as he, you know, in very short time, he got darshan of Radha and Krishna together. They came in front of him, and more importantly, in front of him, Radha and Krishna became one, and then he was shown the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That this was much before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advented. And then the Lord said, I am giving you the secret right now. You don't go and tell it to anyone. But I want you to go and propound, you know, Advaita Dvaita. But I will come in this form. And I will give the path of Radha. I will give another dimension of Radha Krishna Bhakti. But in your own right, you start your sampradaya. But this is confidential. So keeping that confidential message to himself, then he started commencing his duty. So, and Lord, more importantly, Lord Krishna told him, you know, that Lord Chaitanya told him that you will also appear in my pastimes in Kashmir as Keshav Kashmiri. Nimbarka Acharya coming as Keshav Kashmiri. And it said that you will come as a great scholar. Okay. And so scholarly you will be that other scholars will flee, they will run away even hearing your name, Keshav Kashmiri's name, right? But roaming around like that, you will come to Mayapur in Navadvip, where you will have my darshan and I will defeat you. And then you will become my devotee, like that. And then your glories will spread even more as Keshav Kashmiri. So this is the pastime of Sri Nimbarka Acharya. It is said that later, you know, in this pastime, even Narad Muni gave his darshan to Nimbarka Acharya and strengthened his bhakti by initiating him into the sacred 18 syllabled Sri Gopal mantra and introduced him to the philosophy of Yugala Upasana, the devotional worship of the divine couple Sri Radha Krishna in accordance with the teachings of the four Kumaras. So Narad Muni basically reinforced the message of the four Kumaras. And it is also mentioned that this was the first time that Sri Radha Krishna were worshipped together by anyone on earth other than the gopis of Vrindavan. So if you see also in Vrindavan, there is a very huge presence of the Nimbarka Sampradaya. Right? Even our own Sukadeva Prabhu, our vice president of the temple, his father is also an initiating spiritual master in this glorious Sampradaya. So, very glorious sampradaya, very dedicated worship, and they are also worshippers of Radha and Krishna. The greatest, you know, and that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually borrowed from them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, later on when I come, I will borrow good things from best things from every sampradaya, in my sampradaya. So it is said that there are two things that Lord Chaitanya borrowed. The necessity of taking shelter of Srimati Radharani was taken from Nimbarka Sampradaya. And considering the Vraja Gopi's love for Lord Krishna to be the highest in devotion. These two aspects came from Nimbarka Sampradaya. Concluding today's class, Bhishma Panchaka. It is said that this is the last 5 days of Kartik. I know many devotees are doing Bhishma Panchaka. Yesterday I saw one devotee, he was taking only potatoes. During lunchtime we were discussing Krishna Katha yesterday at office. So this devotee was taking potatoes. So it is said that Bhishma Dev, when he left his body, the last 5 days he fasted. And Bhishma was well known for his pratigya, for his vows. So it is said that if we take a vow and follow Bhishma Panchaka, then we can also get the blessings of Bhishma Dev and get the dhrid nischaya for controlling our senses to eat. So the 5 days of Bhishma Panchaka is done by fasting. Now it is said that one can fast by taking Panchagavya. That is the highest level of fasting, it is mentioned. Panchagavya means taking products made of cow dung, milk, urine, yogurt, and or all mixed together. So one can just have all this for 5 days. If one finds that very difficult, then one can take fruits and roots. If one finds that also difficult, one can take Ekadashi Prasadam. And obviously, if one finds that also difficult, one can take Prasadam, Krishna Prasadam. But remember Lord Krishna under any situation. It should not be that we eat roots and fruits, or we take Panchagavya and we are cursing our fate during these 5 days. Better off we eat normal food and discuss Krishna Katha happily. Which is what sometimes after the instructions. Even I found many times Anirudh Prabhu also tells us. Better off you are that you're focusing on the Lord. Which is the instruction of Prabhupada. So it is said that in these 5 days, in day one, not only do devotees fast, but in day one Lord Krishna is worshipped with lotus flowers or Padma. Day 2 he is worshipped with Bilva. Day 1 Padma at the feet of the Lord. Day 2 Bilva at the thighs of the Lord. Day 3 Gandha or scents at the perfumes, at the navel of the Lord. Day 4 he is worshipped with Java flowers to the shoulders of the Lord. And day 5 Malati flowers to the head, Sirodesha, head of the Lord. So it's a combination of deity worship plus fasting. That is how Bhishma Panchaka is celebrated. It's 9 o'clock, I'll stop here. And is there any questions or comments?
What is the importance of Bhishma Panchaka fast?
The importance, as I mentioned, Bhishma Panchaka fast, to the extent that I have understood, and I'll be guided by Gopanish Prabhu, Manmohan Prabhu, and all the others, Mataji, is, as I said, Bhishma is known for his pratigya, and Bhishma Dev also fasted during the last 5 days, okay, meditating totally. He was waiting for Uttarayan to come, and he wanted to leave his body, completely keeping aside his bodily necessities and focusing entirely on the beautiful form of Lord Narayan, Krishna, who was standing in front of him in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So, it is said that when we fast during Bhishma Panchaka, we get the same resolute determination that Bhishma Pita had at the time of quitting our body. We will also have that resolute determination to focus on Lord Krishna, unwavering focus on Lord Krishna. So that is my understanding. But if there is anything more, then I will request the devotees to add. Is there anything else? Gopal Nishku? Okay. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai Prabhupada ki, Jai Prabhupada.